An examination room.
Start now. Here we go.
A man stares through a lens and into a machine. Dots of white flash. He tugs on a trigger.
This is one of the most anxiety-provoking exercises a person can do. This machine, it's called a Humphrey, randomly blinks tiny lights, and I'm to click when I see one. The ones I miss measure my vision loss.
On a screen.
All those numbers there that you see that are zeros are blind spots. He doesn't see those areas.
You see, I have glaucoma, and I've been clicking for almost 20 years. You can see how the disease is robbing me of my sight.
Splotches of black invade a circular area divided in quadrants.
The prospect of going blind terrifies me. And my way of...
A middle-aged man.
Dealing with fear and terror is to confront it.
Titles, Going Blind, a film by Joseph Lovett. The word blind fades from white to black.
Glaucoma is called the thief in the night. Because people don't even realize that they have it, and then one day they wake up and they don't see.
The examining room.
Most people don't know how they see, how the eye works, and what can go wrong. I didn't before I got glaucoma.
A cross-section of an eye in profile.
Glaucoma is a disease of the optic nerve. That's a cable of nerve fibers that takes the data my eye senses and sends it back to my brain to be interpreted as sight. The optic nerve works so well, in fact, that half the fibers can be damaged before you ever notice any sight loss. As those nerve fibers start to die, your field of vision starts to look like a window, with the panes being shot out. As your sight loss progresses, you might unwittingly adjust your gaze to make up for the loss, until it is all gone.
A tree behind rows of squares progressively turning white.
They don't know exactly what causes glaucoma, but pressure, built up within the eye, can destroy the optic nerve. Controlling that interocular pressure is so far the only treatment.
Applying eye drops.
And then you wait 5 minutes for this one. For most people, you know, it's just drops in the eye and you're fine. And that if that doesn't work, then you can have the operations that I've had.
Joe holds one eye open.
What a bleb. You see, and underneath this blister, there's basically a hole cut into the eye, and this acts as a valve, keeping the pressure normal. And then on this eye, I had the same operation, but you can see the bleb is sort of flat.
A series of Joe's black and white and color ID photos.
Diagnosed, I didn't take it seriously. Losing my vision didn't seem real. But now the losses are making a difference.
An apartment.
Have you had lunch?
Yeah, I just had a little cereal. Jim, my partner, is a tall, gray-haired man. And one day in the airport, we were there together, and he could have been any of the tall, gray-haired men. They all looked alike to me.
As he walks down the street, sometimes he bumps into people because he hasn't seen them. We used to ride a lot on our bicycles. Now he's hesitant because sometimes he misses potholes. So that's changed his level of physical activity.
Joe Gardens, then an eye exam.
We'll do the right eye first, okay?
I was fortunate to be diagnosed and treated early. For the past 20 years, I've been going to the New York Eye and Ear Infirmary to see Dr. Robert Rich.
My gut feeling says, wait a little while.
Bob has literally written the book on glaucoma. And young doctors come from all over the world to learn at his side.
Sir, why don't you go over the whole chart and put together everything that's been done? Because he's been coming here for 25 years.
Bob's been as aggressive as my disease, getting me access to the latest drugs and surgical treatments. Some say he's been a miracle worker in preserving as much of my sight as he has.
Your pressures are really good, and your visual field loss is pretty under control. I'm happy.
You're happy. I feel like
You'll be happy too.
I feel like I'm going blind.
You have problems, okay? But for 16 years with bad glaucoma, you're doing okay. Don't need surgery yet. Everything is stable. I don't want to rock the boat. You know, you can't reverse it once it's done.
Now Joe peruses a large print pamphlet, Focus on Glaucoma.
We are doing everything we can to save my remaining vision. But still, it's an emotional roller coaster, knowing how relentless glaucoma can be.
Oh, that's definitely good.
I'm monitored regularly. I volunteer for research studies, and I participate in clinical trials. But still, I worry constantly about the future. What will it be like if I can't read the newspaper, drive a car, see a sunset, or the faces of the people I love?
A family around a table.
Don't even think about that. Don't worry about that. What are you going into?
Like many ophthalmologists, Bob insists on looking at the positive, and he avoids talking about further vision loss. But with the sight I've been losing, I have to be prepared. So I started talking to people who've lost their sight. I stop them on the street and hear what happened to them.
With a man holding a cane.
How did you lose your vision?
In a car accident.
Accidents and diseases like retinitis pigmentosa, diabetic retinopathy, age-related macular degeneration. They were so generous with their stories, and the story so fascinating, that I decided to make this film.
At two computer monitors.
I've been making films on health for years, but this is the first time the health issue is my own.
Joe covers one eye.
Hi.
Can I pet your dog?
Actually, no. He's working right now.
I first met Jessica Jones when she was training her guide dog, Chef. Jessica had lost her sight 4 years before to diabetic retinopathy, an all-too-common complication of diabetes.
It's usually a pretty slowly progressing disease, and mine just came on like that, and I lost my sight within 8 months.
Wow.
Basically,
from fully seeing to not seeing?
Yes.
The cross-section.
Diabetic retinopathy is a disease of the retina, the layers of neurons that line the back of the eye. These nerve cells sense light and send the impulses through the optic nerve back to the brain to be interpreted as sight. Diabetes can cause the blood vessels in the retina to swell and leak and eventually scar. In Jessica's case, the scarring resulted in her retinas detaching permanently.
Jessica removes her sunglasses.
I see nothing out of my right eye at all.
Uh-huh.
And what I see at the periphery of my left eye.
Uh-huh.
Here, so if you see me looking at you like this, I'm not flirting with you. That's right. How I see.
She turns her head.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to adjust?
I'm still adjusting.
Right.
It's only been 4 years.
Yeah. And what about your work?
Well, I'm a teacher.
Uh-huh.
Before I lost my sight, I was an artist and a teacher, an art teacher in the New York City public school system.
And you're able to support yourself?
Yeah. Yep.
How do people treat you? How did that change?
My friends and my family.
She shakes her head and tilts it to one side.
As much as they love me and as much as they mean well, I just want to shake them and go, it's still me. I haven't changed. I mean, I can't see, but I haven't changed. It's still me.
Right.
And you don't have to, like, treat me like I'm eggshells.
Her dog rests at her feet.
Well, you know, what I've been fearing is the loss of independence. I mean,
right.
That really scares me.
Right. I have lots of friends who have lost their sight, who lost their sight 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And they still can't leave the house. And I just couldn't. I just can't sit back and let them do stuff for me.
Yeah.
You know? But you learn how to use what you have. I would have to say the turning point really was Chef.
Mm-hmm.
I was absolutely terrified. I literally could not leave the house by myself. And then I got this guy and my world changed.
Chef on Jessica's bed.
We're going soon, honey.
Chef lies down as Jessica brushes her own hair, applies lipstick, and dons her sunglasses.
Okay, buds, you ready? That's it.
Chef trots to a doorway, wagging his tail.
Your leash is caught, sweetie.
In a dim stairway, Jessica descends and navigates two glass doors to a sunny sidewalk.
Everybody just assumed when I lost my sight that I would go back to Atlanta. But you know what? If you've got to learn to live independently as a blind person, what better place than New York, where you're on a grid and you have all this public transportation? Whereas if I was in Atlanta, I'd be sitting on my ass waiting for somebody in a car to come pick me up and take me where I needed to go.
You go over left, find steps down.
Jessica and Chef enter Canal Street Station.
Taking the subway is my absolute worst fear. I hate it more than anything. It terrifies me.
That's why you were listening to me. You're so smart.
In a subway car.
Watching Jessica, I see that you can push through that fear.
This is Chef's favorite part of the day, after he works.
There he goes.
Chef bounds up the steps in Jessica's apartment building.
All right. Come inside.
Jessica flips a light switch.
There you go.
Chef gnaws a bone.
I was a photographer before I lost my sight, but then I work with people who never picked up a camera until after they lost their sight.
In a large room.
Hey, Claudette. Where is the camera? Is it over here?
Jessica works with blind and sighted photographers at Visions, Services for the Blind in New York.
She's going to have her hand up.
At the forehead.
Like she's doing a Scarlett O'Hara sort of thing.
Okay.
So I want it, like, cut here.
Though Jessica can't see images, she can detect light and shadow.
You are a dark shape in front of, there is obviously a window backlighting you. I'm looking at you through pixelation. I'm looking at you through what, when TV used to actually go off the air at 4 o'clock in the morning and you had that, what was it, fuzz or snow or
snow,
whatever?
Right.
I see everything through that.
Black and white specks cloud the image.
But Jessica's vision loss has not stood in the way of her work.
So this is my scanner and this is all of my unread mail.
Mm-hmm.
My scanner will read my mail.
I hadn't realized how much of a difference new technology has made in the lives of visually impaired people.
The software for the scanner is called Kurzweil. The scanner for your computer is called JAWS.
Mm-hmm.
J-A-W-S. And it will read anything to you that is on the screen, and that includes a Word document or the internet or your email. So for instance, this is just, you know, one of my lesson plans.
Students will further expand art vocabulary by exploring the name and shapes created by intersecting lines, period.
So it really is a secret world.
Jessica's reflection in a mirror.
Yeah, it is. I never thought of it like that, but it is.
I mean, it's really a secret world.
Yeah.
I used to think that you were either fully sighted or blind, and that blind meant no vision at all. But I've learned that the vision loss spectrum is vast. What I'm dealing with now is low vision.
Joe is fitted with glasses.
Low vision means that even with glasses, I can't be corrected to fully sighted.
Not as sharp, right?
This is the old one. Not as sharp, but it's not sharp.
I mean, maybe, not crisp, but
yeah, maybe it's just not
just,
there.
That's just the way it's probably going to be.
Joe peers through dark frame glasses.
An estimated 20 million Americans have low vision, including my friends Tim Turan and his son Emmett. Though Tim and Emmett can find their way unaided, both were born with extremely low vision from a form of albinism. But we had never talked about their eyesight until I started to lose mine.
It's amazing how little I rely on my eyes. I rely on them for orientation, but not for specificity.
In a diner.
So I know where the paper clips are. So as long as I open up the shelf and I go reach there, I'm not actually looking at the same time I'm going to get it. I know they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the eyes don't matter.
How did you guys know that I had bad eyesight?
Remember we used to play the car game on the road? I would always ask you, what color is that car? Or what kind of car is that, a two-door car, or a four-door car, or a station wagon? So that was a way of trying to see how far you could see something.
Emmett is fair-complected and blonde.
Do you feel that your experience helped you to prepare Emmett better than you were prepared, perhaps?
It's challenging in the sense that you do feel different. But I don't think in Emmett's case or my case that it has stopped us from doing things. It's just made some things harder and some things you just know you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you do other things.
Emmett at a piano.
Emmett may have a hard time catching a ball, but he has no problem at the piano.
Emmett kneels outside a paper-filled school locker.
And so far, his school life seems pretty typical.
There, wait, I think I saw it. There it goes.
Okay.
Where has vision held you back?
Do you think? Are there baseball.
Any... Baseball?
My friends always talk about how cool baseball is, but I just thought, I don't think I'd be able to see the ball because, it'd go too fast and I wouldn't be able to see it.
Through a wire fence, Emmett on a grassy field.
Kids can be overprotective.
Good defense!
They don't want me to get hurt, but I know that I just want to play the game.
The Gotham Comedy Club.
Emmett's parents have encouraged him to try his hand at a comedy class. And tonight he's performing for family and friends.
On a stage at a microphone.
How's this for scary? Sounds like the creature from the Black Lagoon, right? Rom, that's my dad sleeping in the next room.
Emmett's dad doubles over in laughter.
Making them laugh and making me the one to talk most kind of takes away the thing where they go, hey, look over there, there's something really cool, and I can't see it.
Next, an apartment. Several framed photos are delivered.
Kramer?
Oh, great, thank you.
Roland's work?
Joe studies them.
Since I still have my central vision, I can appreciate detail. But there are other losses.
At night, a city sidewalk.
The other day, I was walking up the street and was startled to find myself nose to nose with a man I had never seen in front of me. It really unnerved me.
Now, daytime with his partner.
To find out what was going on, a friend suggested I see a low vision therapist, a term I had never heard of. Jim and I went to the New York branch of the Lighthouse International, one of the many institutions helping people cope with vision loss. We met with Dr. Bruce Rosenthal, an optometrist and low vision therapist.
How are you? This is my partner, Jim Cottrell.
How do you do, Jim? Nice to meet you.
Dr. Rosenthal can help me evaluate how and what I actually see.
My objective at this point is to find out, does it affect your mobility? Does it affect your driving?
You stumbled on a crack in the street, which was...
That's a crack.
Very large.
That's just a crack in the street. I mean, that's a stumble. That's not about my vision.
Yes, it is. It really is, because you don't have good contrast, so you may not actually see a pothole in the street.
The doctor stands about 15 feet away.
Yeah.
And look right at my face and see if you could notice if any part of me is missing.
When I first looked at Dr. Rosenthal, everything looked normal. But when I closed my left eye and fixed my gaze at the center of his face, the picture changed drastically.
Black splotches appear.
Parts of his body had disappeared, from his neck down to his hips.
Move your, say, your right hand. Yes, so I don't see your right hand, really.
And if you cover the other eye, you see the right hand.
But I don't see your left. I don't see your left arm at all.
The black areas grow.
Finally, I understood where the holes in my vision were, and it left Jim and me pretty upset. I sobbed for a day, realizing just how much vision was gone. But how could I have never noticed such a huge loss?
You may subconsciously be scanning back and forth in an area where you actually have no visual field present.
Dr. Rosenthal explained that how we see is much more subjective than most of us realize.
A graphic of a tree and the eye cross section.
When I look at an object, light reflects off that object and passes through the lens in the front of the eye. The lens then focuses that light signal onto the retina and its photoreceptive nerve cells in the back of the eye. Then the retina relays the information through the optic nerve back to the brain. And it's the brain that interprets the data as sight, as an image.
Lightning flashes within a graphic of the brain.
But some say only about 20% of the image comes from the actual data. About 80% of what we perceive as sight is put together by the brain from memory. That's why I haven't noticed the holes in my vision. The brain fills them in.
The complete image of the tree.
It was a hard concept to understand until I met artist Devorah Sperber. Devorah's work with familiar images and spools of thread showed me how the brain creates sight.
Stacks of colored spools.
There's a small piece here in the back room that is a perfect example of how little information you need to recognize an image you already know. And what could be more known than the Mona Lisa? There's very little information being offered through these spools of thread, so the resolution is extremely low.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when it's inverted in the sphere, like the human eye, the sphere condenses it.
A glass ball.
Once you actually know there's a Mona Lisa there, you could probably squint out very hard,
mm-hmm.
and I can make the Mona Lisa appear upside down there.
So if our brains are always playing tricks on us, how can we trust what we see?
Outside a red brick building.
Ray Kornman, an outreach coordinator at the Seeing Eye in Morristown, New Jersey, had no idea he had lost vision.
Ray uses a guide dog.
Just went in to get my contact prescription renewed. He asked me if I'd ever been told that I had pigment clusters in my eyes. And very naively, I said no. I said, but would that have anything to do with my night vision getting worse every year? As I was looking at the eye doctor, he was holding his hand slightly off to the side, and he asked me again if I could see his hand there. And I said no. And that's when he pointed out where I had these blind spots and asked me how I got there. And I told him that I drove, and he was horrified. He diagnosed me with retinitis pigmentosa and explained to me that I had this eye disease, that there was no treatment and there was no cure, and I would most likely be completely blind by the age of 40. Thank you, have a nice day. And it was a really tough pill to swallow.
The eye cross-section.
Retinitis pigmentosa is the name for a group of diseases that affect the photoreceptor cells of the retina. Those are the cells that receive the light signals. Like glaucoma, your peripheral vision goes first, and then parts of your central, leaving you with tunnel vision, like looking through a pinhole. But unlike glaucoma, there's little that can be done for most kinds of retinitis pigmentosa.
But then all of a sudden, a lot of the inadequacies that I felt, even as a child growing up, all of a sudden made sense. Why I could never catch a ball or hit a ball. Because even as a child, I was bumping into things all the time, but it was never diagnosed. I knew nothing about blindness or vision loss. I thought I would be sitting in a dark room listening to the radio for the rest of my life. I had a bleak outlook for my future.
A photo of a young Ray, expressionless.
Did that last a long time?
I was working at a bank as an accountant. When I stopped driving, eventually I left that job. I lost my friends, and I pretty much became a shut-in for close to 3 years.
Ray, like Jessica, had been encouraged to accept disability and was offered jobs way below his experience or training.
One was working packing frying pans into boxes, and that was a shift work. And another one was also shift work, stuffing sales circulars into the Sunday paper.
How did you come out the other end?
With White King.
I ended up enrolling in a rehabilitation program, and I saw other people, some who were my instructors, who were totally blind, who were giving me instruction on how to be independent and how to survive. That was very empowering. Like, wow, I can overcome this. And it really helped give me peace of mind that if the worst does happen, that I can still dress myself, that I can still do my laundry, that I can still cross the street. It took me a really long time to come to, because I still see myself as the sighted guy, you know, running around. I'm just Ray. I didn't realize until recently that I'm a blind guy with a seeing eye dog.
Next, Ray's dog guides him past orange traffic cones.
But only a tiny percentage of visually impaired people use a guide dog. So Ray took what he knows best and made it his life's work, letting people know how guide dogs can change their lives.
With a small group.
If you decide to come for our full program, while you're here, this is going to be your home away from home.
This weekend, Ray has invited 6 blind high school kids from all around the country to the Seeing Eye, so they can experience what it's like to have a guide dog.
Students walk with guide dogs.
Close your eyes for a second or two at a time so you get used to just following the pull.
What we've done is we've modified one of our training routes and shortened it a little bit, and we're going to have each of the students will travel that route with their cane first.
A girl with a cane crosses an intersection, the instructor close behind.
That surge of traffic on your left, it's safe to cross.
She crosses. A car stops short.
And then after they complete the route with their cane, they'll be matched up with a dog for the rest of the afternoon. And they can really see the way the two systems can compare.
Very good.
I like to use the comparison where a cane is an obstacle detector, but a dog is an obstacle avoider. Mm-hmm. We're traveling with a dog, you're really putting the trust in the dog, that the dog is using its eyes and is going to guide you around obstacles rather than having to encounter them with your cane.
Tell her, hop up.
Hop up. Now
at a crosswalk with a dog leading.
Even crossing the street, I felt better. I felt like, you know, more confident.
Always hold on to that leash.
Hey, I'm holding on.
Perfect.
Hey, how you doing?
A dog out of harness romps and licks at the girl.
Oh, I almost cried. I'm not even gonna lie. Yes, it was very hard to get the dog back up.
Do you think this is something you're gonna want to do?
Yes,
Kayla?
This is something that I really want to do.
10 years ago, I was that person wondering, was I ever gonna find happiness again? I've accomplished that now. I'm truly living a life today I never imagined that I could. I hope that other people might be able to identify with me and realize that they can have that for themselves too.
My visit with Ray really got me thinking. It was his own assumptions about blind people that made it so hard for him to accept his vision loss at first. Why are the sighted so uninformed about how blind people live? It seems like I have one foot in the sighted world and a lot yet to learn about the world of the blind.
Joe follows Ray and Dog up a flight of stairs. Next, the circular chart.
Though my vision has worsened, low vision therapy has helped a lot.
Moving through a doorway.
Looking straight down at thresholds and through doorways has saved me a lot of tripping. My contrast is not so great, so stairs, especially unlit, require special attention to differentiate one from the other. Again, because of contrast loss, glare kills me. When people are backlit by a window, I see no features, only silhouettes.
Outside, Jessica with Chef.
The thought of not knowing where I am and what's around frightens me. How others navigate amazes me.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, Chef.
A German Shepherd greets Chef.
My dog, Sam, doesn't realize that Chef is working, but I'm more conscious now. And I wonder what I would want to know if I'd lost my sight.
There's a staircase to your left, right here. And then...
So
there's a hallway here, heading straight to the kitchen. There's a dining room to your right.
Okay.
Do you want to take my arm?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Let me do that as we walk through.
Okay.
I realize I've never had a blind person in my home before, and quite frankly, it shames me. Why not? I've known and liked blind people in my life. Why haven't I pursued those friendships?
See, this is a painting that might be interesting to you.
Was it my own discomfort at not knowing anything about their world? Or is our fear of blindness so great that we fear the blind themselves?
Jessica touches a painting.
Over here, this is my favorite part. There's a sea urchin. And I don't know if I ever felt it myself.
Go outside? Outside. Come on.
Come on, Chef. There's a step here and a rug. Chaise in front of you. And a chair in front of you. I never think of so many obstacles. You know? Okay, so here there are five sculptures. So there's one here. Oops.
Oh!
A narrow orange shape topped by a head-like ball.
And you can see.
Oh, that's hair!
Well, it's not real. Yeah, it's wire hair, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's a portrait of the family.
Oh, that's so funny. These are awesome.
Aren't they great?
Yes!
Next, in the ophthalmologist's office.
It's a few months later, and I'm back at Dr. Rich's office. I've been having problems. Out of my left eye, everything is looking foggy, like I'm in a steam room.
I want you to look to the right, and then right back at me quickly. Quickly. Do it again, please. Then right back at me. Good.
That's Dr. Michael Pro is looking to see if the pressure has gone up, and is destroying still more of my vision.
The doctor peers through a device into the eyes.
So did you see anything?
I'm looking for hemorrhages on the optic nerve. Okay, mm-hmm. That's a clear sign that there appears to be some progression.
Mm-hmm.
You took all your drops today?
Mm-hmm.
Your pressure's up a little bit in your left eye.
Normal pressure is mid-teens, but they suspect that even that causes vision loss for me.
It's 30.
It's 30?
Yes.
30 is really scary.
Obviously, 30 is too high, so we're going to have to do something about it.
The doctor leaves the examining room.
I'm concerned. You know, if the pressure is up, it's not good. It hasn't been up for a long time. It's been very controlled. And I'm not seeing as well in that eye.
Last time it was 14.
With Dr. Rich.
Let's see what's going on here. What are we on now? Did I give you a copy of the paper we wrote about why do people with exfoliation syndrome get glaucoma?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm going to give you the take home.
We now know different things can cause glaucoma. One of Bob's research areas has been exfoliation syndrome, and he believes that is what is causing my pressure to rise. Exfoliation syndrome is a systemic condition that can deposit protein particles in my eye's natural drainage. That clogging raises the pressure on the optic nerve.
And it clogs the drain, okay? It's like coffee grounds in the kitchen sink. Let me see you back in a month. I'll get 24 fields, we'll check the pressure, and then we'll put the two together and bring the...
Okay.
At home, Joe applies eye drops.
Pressure with a change in my medications. But within 2 months, the pressure has risen to the 20s. It's time to operate.
In a hospital cap and gown.
This is my third eye surgery, and I'm nervous. Bob is going to revise the trabeculectomy in my left eye.
Right here, room 9.
They'll reopen the canal to allow the fluid that's been causing the pressure to drain out. And at the same time, they will remove a cataract that's been blurring my vision. But here's why I'm so nervous. My kind of glaucoma makes the tissue that holds the lens brittle. And if the new lens drops into my retina, it can blind me. But with my pressures going so high, I don't have much of a choice.
In the operating room.
Joe, you comfortable? Okay. Joe, just relax. Take it easy.
The artificial lens is being inserted right now.
A tiny instrument slides into the eye.
The lens holds.
Looks excellent.
Next, Dr. Rich will fix the drain, the trabeculectomy, and then its valve, the bleb.
The cross section. The operation continues.
All right, we're great. Double or nothing here.
A bandage is removed from the eye.
When I first came out of surgery, you know, things looked like I was in a steam room. And then, of course, it got better. And I was sort of amazed at how fast the vision started to come in.
The lens is well-centered. Great.
I was so pleased. I didn't realize how much this had been weighing on me and how tense I had been about it. And then a few days ago, the pressure started to go up.
In a cab.
And then yesterday, which is about 10 days later, it looked, the steam room effect had come back. And I went over to the hospital and my pressure was 50.
In the examining chair, Joe has drops applied.
They brought the pressure down. But a few days later, the anti-scarring medication tore up my cornea. It was like walking around with razor blades in my eye.
Joe grimaces and covers his eye.
Sit tight. I'm not giving you any more 5-FU. You got some folds in the cornea. You've got a bleb here. We got to maintain this. Go home and have a couple of drinks, and I'll see you.
Oh, Pop, you don't understand. It's killing me.
Honestly, I can give you Tylenol.
With codeine?
I don't know if we have that in the office. That's Janet. Janet, I can give you Tylenol.
Yeah.
I can give you scotch. I can give you vodka, and I can give you Mao Tai.
Next, Joe exits a subway station.
But it's a month later now, and things are settling down.
I'm seeing pretty well. The glare that I'd had from the cataract is gone. Pressure's been very steady. It's been at 7 for about 3-4 weeks, and I'm hoping it remains so. I'm careful at curbs, looking down, looking at oncoming traffic. I don't rush the light the way I used to.
He navigates a crosswalk.
I was being really careful today and walking along, no tripping or anything, and then I smack right into a fire hydrant that I didn't see.
At a computer.
While I am being more careful, the only low vision aid I use is the enlarged type on my computer screen. But it's comforting to know that there is an audio function on most computers if I should need it. As Emmett gets closer to high school, his parents, Tim and Gretchen, want him to know what aids are available, and they thought the information would be valuable for me as well.
At Lighthouse International.
At the Lighthouse, Dr. Michael Fisher is Emmett's low vision therapist.
All right, Emmett, pop up into the chair. Let's see what's doing today. Like, you ever out with your parents or with your friends and sometimes you can't see something that well? Does that ever come up? All right, so this is a real simple telescope. Take a look across the room. You see the chart?
Yeah. H-Z-O-K-D.
He misses several letters.
N-C-A-H-L. Z-H. I can't see the rest of that line.
That's okay. I didn't expect you to go that far.
Yeah.
So you could use it for looking at the board. You could, like we talked about, you could use it for looking at street signs.
Yeah.
If you were at the airport and you needed to look at the board to see when your plane is departing, that would be great.
Yeah.
Right. Well, all those
kinds of
things.
That's just what I was thinking about. I'm hopeless at an airport.
Yeah.
You're next.
After Emmett's appointment, Dr. Fisher showed me what the Lighthouse store offers people with dimming vision, from the simplest aids to higher technology.
A talking thermometer.
There's lots of simple things that you can do. Patients very often say, I can't balance my checkbook. Well, make everything bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, simple things. I tell patients, use a felt tip pen. It's not only going to make the lines wider, but it's going to increase the contrast. Contrast is very often a big problem with patients with low vision.
But this is a larger keyboard.
No, actually, this is a regular keyboard that has these stickers on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It looks bigger.
If we take these off, it's nothing unusual.
I think I'm going to get that.
Now in a room with magnifying devices.
You know, Dr. Fisher, when you're starting to lose your vision, you don't really know where you are in terms of vision loss. Like, do I need a device? Do I not need a device? Is it okay for me to do what I normally do, or should I be more careful? And it's hard figuring out where you are on that loss journey.
On the continuum. Yeah.
And because you've never been there before.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to what you were saying before. A lot of people don't realize what kind of help is available.
Yeah.
And that's why, again, it would be beneficial if their doctors refer them into the system so that they can learn what's available.
Right.
I know that I can help the vast majority of people I see.
Mm-hmm.
People are often not ready for the type of help we can offer. They're looking for a cure. They're very often running from doctor to doctor and looking for a cure. They want the magic glasses that are going to make it all better.
Yeah. Or their vision back.
And bring their vision back. And until they come to terms with the fact that in most cases their vision is not going to come back from these low vision conditions, until they're ready to accept that, very often they're not ready to accept what I can do for them, even though I showed them that I can get them to read and I can get them to do things again.
In his apartment, chopping vegetables.
Knowing that there is help available to make the best use of what vision I have has certainly lowered my anxiety about losing more vision. But knowing there is help available and being willing to get that help are two different things.
Joe seasons a bubbling mixture on the stove.
In New York, I met Pat Williams at the Veterans Administration, where she works.
It's a nice floor. It's quiet. This is Iris, our occupational therapist.
How do you do?
And that's our head nurse.
Pat was born with multiple visual impairments and has severe glaucoma and cataracts.
And I might not be able to recognize faces, but when they talk, then I can know who I'm speaking to.
Mm-hmm. You can't always see faces. I think that could be hard for people to understand. I mean, you don't, quote, look blind.
She wears glasses.
See me. And they assume that I see them like they see me. But sometimes when they come in, they blend into the scenery. Depends on what they're wearing. It depends on the day. It depends on what's going on with my eye. Because one eye is really actually working. And it sees better some days than others.
In a kitchen.
Pat had been relying on her better eye, the right, to see. When an accident blinded that eye, Pat left work for 5 years.
Family photos.
At home, depressed, and with chronic eye pain, the hardest hurdle was learning to ask for help.
You remember when you grabbed the wrong spice? You thought it was paprika. When you realized that it was cinnamon that you put all over the top of
the chicken. At that point, I had to admit that I needed help. And it was hard to admit, I think.
Finally, Pat returned to work at the VA hospital, and help was available.
So, actually, I think you could go into email.
Because of her low vision, Pat's been provided not just with applications to enlarge the information on her screen, but also with training.
Oh, how about that one right there? Would be a good one to start with.
This one.
Okay.
Pat selects a message.
You were reluctant at first to learn new technology.
Yes, I was.
To take rehabilitative training.
Yes, I was.
So what changed?
The fear. It's a fear factor. And when you have that fear factor there and you don't go beyond that fear, it really does keep you back. It keeps you in a holding place.
In a crosswalk, Pat holds a folded white cane.
Willing to carry a cane, but not yet willing to use it regularly, Pat gets into embarrassing situations.
When I go to another hospital, I'm lost. North, east, west, south, go over here, go over there. And they're telling me all these places. I'm like, I don't know where I am. I get up the elevator, they say, go down to the left, go this way, go that way. And I can't see the signs, so I'm really at a disadvantage.
What is it about the cane that makes people not want to use it?
It's not the cane itself, it's what it represents. It's telling people that I'm blind. I feel vulnerable that someone's going to want to hurt me, rip me off.
And has that been your experience? Has that happened to you?
No, it's never happened.
Is part of it wanting to pass as a sighted person?
Definitely. It's wanting to pass. Wow, that's deep. That's really deep. Because you do, you know, even from children, we want to be normal. We want to look like everybody else. We want to blend in. I don't want to be identified as a blind person. And I am one of those people because I can't see the crosswalk. I can't see the when it says walk, don't walk. But see now, what can I see on that sign?
A grocery store.
Absolutely nothing.
When Pat goes shopping, her nephew Cedrian makes the trip easier.
Right here.
How much is this one?
$2.79.
Okay.
So I take two of them. I think that's it.
How do you balance the independence that you want and the need to ask people for help?
Sometimes you have to swallow your pride. It's foolish pride, actually, because it's time that you really should ask for help.
A shoe store.
Is this brown?
No.
But it would look brown.
Okay.
What color is it?
Like purple.
Ooh, nice.
In a parking lot.
Losing vision is very confusing.
Hey, you think you could find my car?
Oh, it was near this. This
warm.
Thing right here. It's right beyond it. Is this it? No.
You're trying to save your remaining vision, yet at the same time, you need to adapt to the losses you already have.
The Low Vision Store, Orange Bump Dots.
I'm lucky I've learned about low vision adaptation early. Most patients don't hear about it until they've lost most of their sight.
You can do it by feel, so that way you don't always have to pull out a magnifier or do something to be able to see it.
Joe's kitchen, brightly lit.
For now, just a few changes makes a huge difference. At home, we've lit the house brightly. The walls and floors are white to reflect the most light.
A clothes closet.
Because of contrast loss, dark closets are black holes to me. So each one has a light in it.
A food shelf, baking supply.
Like for Pat, items on shelves don't jump out at me the way they used to. There's not much I can do about it at the store, but at home, groceries are organized and even labeled to make finding them easier.
On his bike.
I've chosen to keep riding my bike. I know where the holes in my vision are, and I actively scan to make sure I'm seeing what's in front of me. Accepting the losses that I have has helped to assess just what I need to do for now, because the sight I've lost is not coming back, and may indeed get worse.
Next, with a doctor in a hallway, then an examining room.
It's been a year since surgery, and my vision has again started to get blurrier. I'm at Dr. Rich's office, and I'm worried.
Glaucoma Associates of New York.
Dr. Rich is concerned that the trabeculectomy, the drainage canal he created to lower my pressure, has scarred over. A newly developed scanner can show what's going on.
Let's evaluate the operations and take pictures of any anterior part of the eye. Mm-hmm. Very good. Just hold it this way. So, basically, the main idea behind a trabeculectomy is to make a connection between the anterior part of the eye and the external wall.
They view the image on a monitor.
Okay, that unfortunately that the connection, the canal between the anterior part of the eye and the external part is closed due to scar tissue formation.
Right, right.
And that's why it's failing.
Joe nods slowly. Another exam.
All right, so back pressure is 16 in that eye. So
that's not great.
Yeah, it didn't really respond.
The uncontrolled pressure has done yet more damage to my left eye.
If I look at a word, if I look at the word Miguel, okay, like the M and the I might be fine and the E and the L, but the G or the U might not really be there.
Especially in your left eye.
Yes.
You can see that your center vision is defective. I mean, you've got this whole black area right here, and your center vision is not clear. So the crispness and the sharpness that you used to have is not there anymore.
Joe holds a finger at his pursed lips.
But let's get him in here and see what he wants to do. All right, I'll be right back.
Okay.
Excuse me. Okay, so how are we doing?
Not that great.
To me, it feels like the beginning of the end. But to Bob, this is part of the long haul.
You know, today, compared to last year, compared to the year before, I think
you're holding your own. And it, with the amount of vision you have left, you should go on indefinitely, at least till you're 87.
He was just asking, what if the pressure continues to rise?
Then I would do annealing.
That's what we talked about.
Mm-hmm. I'm not touching it now, hands off. But everything's okay, and then in a month we'll see what it is.
Joe stares blankly. Next, he drives toward the Holland Tunnel.
This stuff gets me crazy. I hate that I'm now losing central vision in my left eye. I hate it. Yet I do still see. I can still read, mostly with my right eye, and I still drive. Road signs, license plates in front of me, they're still there. But for how much longer?
At a toll booth.
Thank you.
Today, I'm driving to New Jersey to meet with architect Peter Delia. At 85, Peter cares very much about keeping vision in his later years.
This is built in Bernersville.
A photo of a two-story home.
Peter has AMD. That stands for age-related macular degeneration. AMD is the leading cause of blindness in the developed world. Because we are living longer, the number of Americans with AMD is expected to double in the next 10 years.
The cross-section of an eye.
The macula is a small area of the retina, located near the optic nerve at the back of the eye. It is responsible for our central, most acute vision. In patients with what is called wet age-related macular degeneration, blood vessels grow under the macula. They leak and scar, causing gradual vision loss. 10 years ago is when Peter lost the vision in his right eye.
You've lost almost all your vision, right?
Central vision. No, I can see all around, but if I were to close this right eye, left eye, I can't see now. You're just a blob.
The center of the image blurs.
But just a year ago, Peter noticed problems in his left eye.
How did you first notice that there was something wrong?
I couldn't see a golf ball. I'd have an idea which direction it was going, but I didn't know where the hell it went. I became very frustrated. I really did. Because I wanted to read. I couldn't even read a book.
He was quite upset, wondering what he would do, how he would ever continue drawing if he kept losing his sight like this, and you know what would happen to him.
Mr. Deli, I'm just going to go over some of the photographs with you.
Dr. Ronald Gentile is Peter's ophthalmologist. He's been treating macular degeneration for over 10 years.
10 years ago, our options in terms of treatment were limited, and it was very rare that we had a patient actually improve in vision.
But a lot has changed in 10 years. New drugs called anti-VEGF were found to stop the blood vessel growth that causes wet age-related macular degeneration.
This newer treatment, we may be able to actually improve your vision and truly stabilize your vision and get you functioning.
That's quite revolutionary, isn't it?
Yes.
The doctor fills a syringe.
The drug to stop the blood vessel damage is injected directly into Peter's eye.
I woke up the next morning, I'd be able to read the newspaper, and I could draw.
At a drafting table.
Not since cataract replacements and corneal transplants have doctors actually been able to reverse blindness.
Some people say to you, why are you still working at your age? You should be enjoying life.
I'm just in love with architecture.
And I think you're probably in the vanguard of the new generation of aging people who enjoy what they do and want to keep on doing it.
Yep, that's right.
Outside, bundled in a jacket, a sign, "Welcome to the West End."
It's great that there's been a revolution in treating macular degeneration. But great leaps of progress aren't yet available in glaucoma, nor in most other blinding diseases. I was invited to Boston to the Scapin's Eye Institute, one of the leading research centers on eye disease, to see what is on the cutting edge and to understand why more isn't happening.
We cover new understandings of disease so we can develop new treatments.
Dr. Michael Gilmore, Scapin's former director of research, says that the research dollars just don't match the needs of a longer living society.
Once you're above 65 or 70, you've got about a 1 in 3 chance of having significant vision loss from an eye disease.
A white-bearded man.
But yet, we're only spending about $20 per individual in that age group for research. And that's not a lot. Mm-hmm. It turns out the retina, the optic nerve, are really extensions of the brain, parts of the central nervous system. And it's been thought that when nerves of the central nervous system degenerate, they can't be regenerated. And so that's something that we now believe is not true.
Since glaucoma destroys the optic nerve, the idea of regenerating the nerve is a dream to me. But it's been made a reality by Dr. Dongfang Chen. Dr. Chen and her team have taken newborn mice with severed optic nerves, and they've regenerated those nerves from the retina all the way back to the brain. They've repeated that success in over 100 mice.
In one day, it's already grown 1 millimeter, which is actually right. The same speed that our nerve regrows during the embryonic stage. And by day 4, the whole thing is recovered.
Observing photos.
Describe vision loss to glaucoma. You know, they say, and it's irreplaceable vision loss. But what you're talking about gives people hope about it coming back.
Most people probably didn't realize that actually, when optic nerve injured, eye are perfectly functioning. Brain are perfectly functioning.
I never realized that before. I just assumed the eye stopped working.
And therefore, if we could regenerate the optic nerve, then whatever eye is seeing can still be carried on to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be able to regain the vision again.
So your research is, in a way, is that basic. It's about regenerating a nerve.
Right.
It could be an optic nerve, it could be a spinal cord.
It could also potentially cure like a spinal cord, paralysis caused by spinal cord, mm-hmm. or other neurodegenerative diseases such as stroke. And many of these diseases involve the damage of nerve fibers or nerve connections.
Mm-hmm. A mouse scurries in a clear cage.
And the research goes beyond the optic nerve. In an adjoining lab, three mice, each bred to have a different blinding disease, are helping Dr. Chen to regenerate retinal cells as well. The first has retinitis pigmentosa, like Ray.
Ray and his dog at an airport.
The second, macular degeneration, like Peter.
Peter reads a paper with a magnifying glass.
And the third, albinism, like Emmett.
What we're trying to do is to inject this chemical we discovered in my laboratory into the eye of the mouse. Then they could activate the stem cells that already exist in the retina mm-hmm. and turn them into photoreceptor cells. So actually reversing the loss of neuronal functions, I think that is really exciting.
It is exciting. But when will such advances actually be available to the millions of people who are slowly losing their vision right now?
A busy intersection.
Some say that slow sight loss is like always being in mourning, wondering what's going next. Contrast, acuity, more field loss. I understand. Now that the uncontrolled pressure in my left eye is damaging my central vision, it's one more loss to deal with.
An eye chart, the center area blurs.
To save my remaining vision, Bob has decided to reopen the trabeculectomy, but this time with new techniques that may finally achieve a proper pressure. First, he lasers the blood vessels that would have promoted scarring. Then he injects the eye with new anti-scarring drugs. And finally, with a needle, he reopens the trabeculectomy.
The eye cross-section.
The fluid flows, and when we check, the pressure comes down to a magic number, 8. But will it hold?
Joe follows a gentleman into an office.
It's now 4 months later, and I'm back in the office to see if it's working.
Give me 1 second, Mr. Lowe. You want to see 1 second?
Sure. But something unexpected. The results of a study on exfoliation I volunteered for are in.
You do have the gene mutation that predisposes individuals to exfoliation glaucoma.
Oh, you're kidding?
No.
Wow. So it's familial.
Very. I mean, we've been waiting for this, the results for these for a really long time.
This gene discovery means that gene therapy may be able to treat my kind of glaucoma. But that's in the future.
In a darkened examining room.
Right now, only lower pressures might save my remaining vision.
Breathe normally. Don't hold your breath, okay?
We're hoping for a pressure below 10.
Blue light shines into each of his eyes.
Straight. Excellent. I got a pressure of 7 in the right, 8 on the left.
Oh, that's great.
Fantastic.
So, what's recent?
His pressures prior to the needling were in the mid-teens, 15 to 16, and now they're in the high single digits.
Good.
Dr. Rich examines his eyes.
Yeah. Okay. You cannot get a better pressure than what you have now.
Do you feel that this is going to stop the vision loss?
Yeah, and if the pressure goes up and it starts, then we'll do something else to keep it down. We've been going through this for 25 years.
Now Joe gazes at a window, then on his bike.
Pressure good in both eyes, finally. But the situation remains confusing. How much should I limit myself because of my vision loss? And conversely, how much can I take on with the vision I have left? And what about future losses? Can I prepare for them?
A young man using a white cane.
Steve Baskus, a 22-year-old Iraq war veteran, never had a chance to think about these issues.
I knew that I could be injured. I knew that I could get hurt. But I never knew that I'd lose my vision.
The Blinded Veterans Association put me in touch with Steve just a few months after he had lost his sight to a roadside bomb attack. Though the statistics are not widely known, four times as many soldiers have come home with significant eye injuries than have lost a limb in the Iraq and Afghanistan war.
An individual with two prosthetics and a white cane.
What was the accident that caused your loss of vision?
It was basically an explosion, and it was concentrated on the right side of our vehicle. And it blew up and went through the door, went through my buddy, and hit me. The shrapnel damaged my head, my eyes, and behind my eyes, my sinuses.
A photo, Steve in uniform.
I knew I could literally give up on things for a while, you know, and just like feel really sorry about myself. But that's not me. I just wanted to get better.
While still recovering from his wounds, Steve transferred from Walter Reed to the Heinz Blind Rehabilitation Center in Chicago to get the training he knew he needed.
We're not dealing with just the organ of the eye. We're dealing with the whole person.
Jerry Shutter directs the program.
We're dealing with all the skills and all the training that goes around that allows them really to, once again, gain control of their life. Most people want to work. They don't want to sit at home. They don't want to have people waiting on them. Where is your quality of life? Where is your control of your life, you know, and where's your self-esteem? And as many of the guys tell me, you know, it's, you've given me my life back.
I was fortunate and very lucky, blessed, whatever you want to call it, that I still have the ability to think and communicate and do a lot of the things I did before, even though I just lost my, you know, just lost my vision.
Steve knows firsthand what can happen in combat. The range and intensity of war injury.
The young man with prosthetics and a white cane.
Let me trade legs with you,
okay,
Steve,
here you
see
go,
how
man.
That would work out.
Each one of his buddies in rehab at Heinz has something different to deal with.
When I first got here, he was getting around this place so good. And, you know, I wanted to do the same thing, and right now I'm getting around the place pretty good. And it all started off paying attention to what he was doing, and even though I don't like following an Army guy. But,
he knows Army.
Army leads the way.
It's been 3 months of hard work for Steve, learning to live without his sight and with limited mobility from his other injuries, but his progress has been remarkable.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
Pretty good.
Michelle Robinson is Steve's orientation and mobility trainer. She's been working with Steve 5 days a week since he got to Heinz.
Steve climbs into a red van.
His final week of mobility training, so He's worked up to this point.
Steve sweeps his cane along a sidewalk.
This is the first time I've ever been shown how to use a cane.
And how do you know when to cross?
I just listen. I'll be listening to the traffic to my left. Seems like it's slowed down for something, and now it's kind of moved on. I could stay at the intersection for 30 minutes and make sure that I have a good understanding of where the cars are going. I can't see. I get a picture, though, of the whole intersection. Mm-hmm. While I'm walking down the sidewalk, I'll listen to the traffic to my left and kind of like square off my left shoulder and try to stay, you know, parallel with it,
right,
and walk.
A fountain on the sidewalk is usually on. With no sound from the rushing water, Steve loses his orientation.
I don't know if there's construction or something going on up here.
Steve pauses, then turns back toward the fountain. His cane taps against its brick ledge on his left, and he reaches for it, inspecting it before continuing away from it. Next, the two men, Steve on the edge of a bed.
You know, you were being great about telling me, you know, what you were doing, but you lost your concentration having to spend time with me.
I did. I know, and I, you know, I don't usually, I don't mess up very often. I'm going to look lost. I'm blind. I mean, I'm tapping things and stuff, but I'm really not. That's what people who are sighted, you can see they're like looking at you. They're like, what is he doing? He needs help.
Right, why is he tapping that building? Why is he turning around?
They have no understanding. They're not educated.
And you're just trying to orient yourself.
And I'm oriented, yeah. Yeah, you see me realign, I'll go back, I'll check it, and I'll come back.
Steve taps along the edge of a red brick building and reaches out to a locked door.
This is the end point. This is where I was supposed to get.
At Heinz, Steve has had to learn basic living skills as well.
I normally get around my room by just feeling, so I'll touch around using a line of direction off of some object. I can find the desk,
mm-hmm.
I mean the TV, of course.
Raises his right arm bent at the elbow.
Protective posture, you know, that I learned so I don't run into something with my head or anything. Since I know my room so well, I just know where everything's at.
Right. What about organizing your clothing and things like that?
Organizing my clothing, I have a tool. This is called the Colorino. It'll tell me the color of the of whatever. Black.
A palm-sized unit he presses at his sweater.
No problem.
Brown.
Skin brown.
Though there are now many devices like the Colorino to make life go smoother, Braille is still a basic that Steve wants to learn.
P is 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm. He presses keys on a manual brailler.
But it's at the computer that Steve feels most comfortable. He's using it to find an apartment. Gio Adepilli is his instructor.
So he's basically doing everything that anybody else can do on the computer. Everything that everybody does with mouses, he's doing everything with the keyboard. I'm actually visually impaired myself.
Oh, you are?
And I can't see the screen either, so I'm paying attention to what he's saying.
You're kidding. You can't see the screen either?
No, I cannot see the screen.
A man joins Steve at a workbench.
Now you're showing what you know.
Steve's manual skill class is not so much about learning specific tools as to develop comfort and confidence in his sense of touch.
All right, so get the click ruler.
Okay.
So how would you set that for, I don't know, 2 inches exactly?
2 inches?
Mm-hmm.
Sam Janisauskas is Steve's instructor.
I have retinaschisis, and that's where you have small, you know, lesions in the retina at birth. And what that leaves is some scar tissue. There's some laser surgeries done. So primarily the vision loss is just from the scarred retina.
Do you worry about losing your sight?
Really, this is something that is good, I think, for you to hear. You know, and here we have so many vets that come in with these degenerative conditions and they're preparing for blindness.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way. You train for the situation you have now. If you have partial vision, when you go home, you're not going to close your eyes and function that way. You can't train for that, a situation you don't have. To be worried about it, that's one thing, but how you live in the meantime is totally different. Yeah, it could happen, but I can't spend all day, what if, what if, what if. You got to worry about what is.
In a hallway with Steve.
Sam was so right.
Sure.
Constantly worrying about the future doesn't do me nor anyone else any good. We need to do the best we can with the now.
Chef. Hey, Chevy.
Hey,
Pop. How are you?
And what Jessica does with the now never stops inspiring.
Jessica reaches for a glass in a cabinet.
Since we met a few years ago, Jessica's been working as an art teacher, for blind and multiply disabled children. She invited me over to see how she's redecorated her apartment.
Everything that you will see her from here on out is based on that orange there.
You know, some people might say, what does a blind person care about the color of a couch?
Well, first of all, remember, you know, I could see extremely well for 32 years, and I have an extremely strong visual memory. I have students who have never seen anything in their lives, and to some of them, color and decorations or whatever means absolutely nothing. It's extraneous information. They just don't care. But to some of them, it is extremely important. Very, very important. One of my students was doing, I forget what he was paper macheing, and I suggested that he use gray. And he said, well, what's gray? Mm-hmm. And this particular gray that I had, I said, well, you know what it smells like when it rains on the street in August? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes. And I said, that's gray.
Wow.
And he's like, oh, okay, I'll use gray. So this is it.
Her bedroom.
Well, it's totally different.
Uh-huh.
As inspiring as Jessica is to me, she is very clear about the difficulties of navigating even with the best technology.
Believe me, the novelty of Jaws and Kurzweil wore off really, really quickly.
At a computer.
Mm. And then it became like one more thing that's really great, but...
Yeah, exactly.
And I just wonder, how do you deal with the frustration?
You know, I work with students who have so many more obstacles to deal with than I do. Mm-hmm. You know, on top of being blind or visually impaired, they have multiple handicaps, and they are constantly inspirational to me. There are some days when I just am absolutely at my wit's end. Mm-hmm. But then some days, you know, it's better. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I can do this.
She nods.
And what she does very well. So well that the Metropolitan Museum of Art's outreach program invited Jessica to conduct a seminar for children with special needs.
A street sign, Fifth Avenue, Museum Mile. Jessica and Chef walk along a marble floor.
You guys, my name is Jessica, and I'm really, really glad that everybody was able to make it here today.
And so, Jessica, to your right is Connor.
Hi, Connor.
Hello.
Nice, bright voice. Where's Danielle?
Danielle is...
Hi, Danielle.
Yes.
Hi.
It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
John, I'm sorry. How old are you?
Johnny, right here. This is Johnny.
John's head is in his lap. Next, the group tours the museum, a marble statue of a bare-chested man, a sphinx-like creature.
And what we're doing is taking them on a tour of several dactyl pieces of artwork in the Egyptian gallery at the Met.
They pass a bas-relief and enter a massive glass-enclosed area featuring remains of the Egyptian temple of Dendur.
And what the kids are going to be investigating is how a lot of times in Egyptian art you will find the joining of animal and human characteristics in a figure in art. This is Sakhmet. And Sakhmet is a goddess, okay? Sakhmet has the feet of a woman. She's got the legs of a woman. She's got the hands and the arms of a woman. But... she has the face of a lion.
The children explore the statue with their hands.
Being able to touch something is being able to see. That is how they were born seeing, was with their hands. It is as utterly natural for them to gain information that way, as natural as it would have been for myself to gain information through my eyes, you know, 7 years ago.
Did you find a dog there, Connor?
Oh, here.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, is it a whole dog or is it part person?
Whole dog.
It's a whole dog. You're going to find lots of different kinds of just animals on here. And you know what else? There's lots of snakes.
Next, a sphinx.
Come this way. This is her tail. reach, 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 reach. That's the tip of her tail.
Wow.
Yeah, really long tail, right?
Yeah.
So I really enjoy being able to guide someone down a path towards some sort of a discovery. You know, that aha moment.
We're going to give everybody some clay. All right?
Yes.
And why don't you think about making a combination of you and the animal that you would like to be?
John, your favorite animal was a... Tell me it was a bird. Could you make a sculpture of a human and a bird together?
John nods.
Okay.
When you first met John, he was so inward and basically, you know, folded over on himself.
Why is the bird your favorite animal?
It flies.
Because it flies? Yeah, I'd love to be able to fly.
You have this incredible ability to pull kids like that right out and right up. How do you do that?
I've just found that if you include them, they will begin to open up and they will begin to contribute.
It's amazing.
You know, when you first lost your sight and you said that people didn't think that you could be an art teacher.
It wasn't just people telling me that I couldn't do it, but it was me trying to figure out how I could possibly do it myself.
Teach me.
Yeah. And then teach what is customarily referred to as a visual medium.
Connor.
Wow. It has eagle's wings, the spikes on the back of its back like a lizard, and they made a snake body with a big piece of clay.
Danielle.
Very nice. I love this.
Thank you.
Aren't you a little amazed at where you are and what you accomplish on a day-to-day basis?
No, and I'm constantly being reminded that I should be.
How is it that somebody who 7 years ago was trying to figure out how on earth am I going to ever get by, and you live this life that you do with these people that you whose lives you change?
Because
what's the disconnect?
Honestly, because that's just my type A personality, that I can always do better. I can always be doing more. Quite honestly, and yeah, it just. Really don't. I don't look at it as something that's so wonderful or amazing. It's just going on with my life.
She tilts her head.
It's okay.
Just getting on with life. Jessica makes it seem so doable.
Ray emerging from a car at an airport.
And so does Ray.
Okay. Horoscope.
Ray travels all around the world in his work, educating people about the seeing eye. But he has a new challenge now. His guide dog, Richie, has retired, and this is the first trip with his new dog, Morris.
Good boy.
Approaching an entrance.
Hey, Morris, inside. Morris, right?
There was a period of time where, you know, because I didn't have Richie, I kind of, like, lost my left arm, and I wasn't as confident traveling.
Steady.
Entering a new environment with a new dog, I wasn't sure how he was going to react. But so far, he's doing great.
Ray pauses. Morris sits.
When I enter an area that I need to orient myself, I'll usually kind of take a pause for a moment to kind of listen. Just kind of getting a layout of the size of the room, the size of the area, where the voices are coming from. So I'm looking for those things auditorily.
They stride along a passageway.
Good job, buddy. We really are a team, a partnership. So I'm giving him information. He's giving me information by his body language and his body posture. I can feel his head turn. Right, right. Counter.
Ray stops at a concession.
Hello. Hi, do you sell bottles of water here?
Yes, I am fine.
Oh, great.
In the seating area at a gate.
Are there any seats available around here? Up, up. There we go. Morris, free, hop up, free, hop up. Good boy. Right, right.
when I have a beautiful dog alongside of me. It's a great icebreaker.
Another traveler.
I saw you and the dog looking for a location, and finally he was able to find a spot in the tree.
So he showed that to me by kind of pulling me and turning his head, and then I kind of verified that with my hand to make sure, or by just calling out, make sure I wasn't going to sit on somebody's lap.
Well, do you can see some?
I mean, I can see, I have light perception, so I can see where there's windows, you know, or there's light.
Right.
Not enough to get around without some type of a device.
Understand.
Yeah.
Understand.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm very curious, and it's. Well, thank you for sharing.
A plane parked at the gate. A man approaches Ray.
Sir, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi.
Are you on flight 1127 today?
Yes.
Okay, we're ready to board you if you're ready.
Terrific. Steady.
Ray and Morris proceed through the gateway. Ray takes a window seat while Morris curls under his legs.
Okay. So it's great to be moving around again. Now 2 months into having a new dog, and that confidence is there again. There is a whole world out there that we can live in.
Now, Pat at the front of a room full of individuals.
I can't see you. Can you see me?
Yes.
Can everyone see me? I wanted to speak to you today about vision and vision loss.
Pat Williams isn't hiding her vision problems anymore. In fact, she's begun a campaign to help others understand them.
You know, you can help someone by being their eyes, by helping them across the street if they need it. Everyone doesn't need it. Because sometimes you don't want to address it. So you just say nothing. But that perpetuates people not knowing. It perpetuates ignorance.
It's a small mission for me today, is just to make people aware that, you know, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere, and there are many more people like me.
Pat receives a hug from a woman. Next, a six-story building at an intersection.
And back in Chicago, just 5 months after being completely blinded, Steve has rented an apartment.
How's it been adjusting to having your own apartment?
It's been both very easy and difficult, I guess, at the same time. Just moving around the place, getting to know a new place is different.
Steve navigates an area with arms outstretched toward a wall at left.
I memorize where everything's at. It's just something you do.
He opens a container of yogurt.
It's so, like, I would say almost tedious in a way. You just have to be patient, I guess, and do things a lot slower. You have to. I mean, if you want to be safe, if you want to live to see the next day or hear the next day either way, you just have to take things slower.
In a stairway with his cane and a trash bag.
I've always... Just being me, I've always liked a challenge. You could say this is a life challenge in a way. I get frustrated, of course.
Do you feel comfortable yet going out and doing things?
I have ventured out in the immediate area around my building. I haven't returned down the street where a lot of my training occurred, which was just right across the street. But it's very different to do it on your own. I look at it like it's not so much, so fun anymore.
A busy intersection.
Yeah, you do the best with what you got, and things happen. I can't change it, but I know that I am very capable, whether it's work or getting the everyday little things done. I'm going to move on and do it.
Steve adjusts computer wiring.
Steve is just at the beginning of his new journey, and there's no doubt in my mind that he'll reach the expertise and comfort that Jessica and Ray now have in their daily lives. Steve has learned, just as I have, that losing vision is not the end of the world. Everyone I've met while making this film has reinforced what Jessica first told me.
You learn how to use what you have.
And that includes all the medical and research help we can get. All skills that can be learned.
A man walks briskly with a white cane.
All the ever-increasing technology that is available to us. And, as important, all the love and support of family and friends we are offered. Jessica, Pat, Ray, Peter, Emmett, and Steve have all shown me that what was once unthinkable is actually very doable. And it's time for all of us to come out of the dark about vision loss.
Superimposed over a series of vision test images and diagnostic materials, credits appear, including produced, written, and directed by Joseph Lovett, produced by Hilary Klotz-Steinman, editors Jason Sabo, Jamie Hogan, associate producer Logan Schmid, principal photography by Matthew Akers, music by Doug Maxwell, Joel Goodman, graphics created and donated by Magenta, sound mixer Greg Jansen for the Visionary Media Company. Going Blind was made possible with major funding from the Reader's Digest Partners for Sight Foundation and Pfizer Ophthalmics, and support granted by Gibney Family Foundation, Aline Royce Memorial Trust, National Eye Institute, Allergan Foundation, Fred A. Lennon Charitable Trust, Rudin Foundation, May and Samuel Rudin Family Foundation, Reed Williams Foundation. With special thanks to Susan Olivo, James Cottrell, M.D., Tony Levy, Andrew Fisher, IFP, New York Eye and Ear Infirmary, the Veterans Administration. Below a logo featuring the silhouette of a dog looking into a movie camera on a tripod, Lovett Productions, copyright 2010, www.goingblindmovie.com. Audio description produced by Audio Description Associates and the American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project. This is Joel Snyder.